In Congress, for more than four decades, Massachusetts Senator Ed Markey will seek a second term next year. The Democrat sat down with WAMC on Friday in Pittsfield to talk about the 2020 election, abortion rights, impeachment, and Robert Mueller's press conference this week.
Number one, the Mueller report concluded that the Russians had tried intensively to interfere with our election in 2016. Number two, that it was impossible for Mueller to say that President Trump did not commit a crime. And number three, that Mueller said that Congress is a recourse because he, as an employee of the Justice Department, is constrained by a policy which says that you cannot indict a sitting president, but that Congress can take action. And so from my perspective, the statement by Mueller is an invitation for Congress to commence hearings, an investigation into whether or not the president did in fact commit crimes in 2016 or its aftermath in his pursuit of the presidency in his relationship with the Russians.
Some of your colleagues in the House and the Senate have called for President Trump to be impeached. Where do you stand on the issue?
My feeling is that first we have to have the comprehensive hearings on the Mueller report itself with Donald McGahn, Hope Hicks, Robert Mueller, and anyone else necessary to get the information which the American people need, that we need an unredacted copy of the Mueller report to be given to key members of the House and the Senate, that the White House should be forced to provide key documents and information that right now they are withholding, and then the Congress should conduct an investigation to determine whether or not the president had committed crimes, and if so, then we should begin an impeachment proceeding.
Staying on the national level, Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell said that he would consider filling a vacancy on the Supreme Court in 2020 should one emerge. This directly contradicts his stance in 2016 concerning the appointment of Merrick Garland during the presidency of Barack Obama. What was your takeaway from Mitch McConnell's remarks?
What Mitch McConnell did to Merrick Garland is a disgrace. What he is now saying about his willingness to confirm a Supreme Court justice in the presidential election year is just rank hypocrisy, given what he did to Merrick Garland. So it's all part of this Republican attempt to completely control the American judiciary and leave that as the legacy of Donald Trump for a generation.
Speaking of the Supreme Court, in the wake of a series of restrictive abortion laws being passed around the country, are you concerned that should the issue come before the Supreme Court today, they might overturn Roe v. Wade?
I'm very concerned about this Supreme Court, as it's presently constituted, dealing with abortion issues. But I think that it would create an emergency in our country in terms of a woman's right to choose if Trump had an opportunity to name two new Supreme Court justices during his second term. I think that would lead to a death knell for Roe versus Wade as we know it. And that is absolutely unacceptable and why it's imperative for Donald Trump to be removed as president in November of 2020.
On the subject of 2020, what are your thoughts on your fellow Senator Elizabeth Warren and her bid for the presidency?
Well, I've endorsed Elizabeth Warren. She's my colleague. She's a great senator. I think she'll be a great president. And I was at her announcement in Lawrence, Massachusetts, and I spoke on her behalf in Lawrence that day. I'm very proud of her, and I think that her candidacy is growing in strength as each day goes by, and she's become someone who has set the substantive parameters of what is being discussed in the Democratic presidential primary, and I'm very proud of her.
What about Elizabeth Warren makes her the right choice for president?
She's very smart and disciplined and idealistic. She has high goals for the country, which we need. She knows how to fight for them. And I think that's what we're going to need to take on Donald Trump in 2020 as we head towards the presidential debates.
You'll be facing an opponent in your bid for a second term in the 2020 Democratic primary here in Massachusetts. What are your thoughts on facing Shannon Liss Reardon in the fall?
Well, I'm going to run a very strong race based upon the principles that I believe in. We need to fight to ensure that no child has to worry about climate change impacting their family or our country. No child has to worry about whether or not their family is going to lose their health care. That no child has to worry that a gunman might come into their school because it was easy to purchase a gun in our country. I'm going to run on the issues that I care deeply about. I've been a change agent throughout my entire career, and I'm going to run on that in 2020.
Looking back over your first term, what are you most proud of, and what highlights do you plan on talking about in your bid for reelection?
Well, at the top of the list is introducing the Green New Deal with Congresswoman Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, which has already changed the entire debate in our country on climate change. It's catapulted climate to the top of the list, the most important issues in the presidential race. And the ambition of the Green New Deal is something that I think is absolutely inspiring young people, especially across this country. And it's something that I think is going to be a very powerful thing for Donald Trump to have to deal with. I'm also very proud of the work that I've done on the opioid crisis. I've been able to pass four critical opioid protections that are now the law of the nation, dealing with fentanyl, dealing with Suboxone and medically assisted treatment, setting up a scorecard for how we're going to be dealing with looking at which one of the treatment regimes work across the entirety of the country, focusing on HIV, AIDS, and hepatitis C and its co-infection rate with opioid addiction. All of those are now laws, which I was able to successfully partner with Republicans to put on the books in the last couple of years. So I'm going to continue in that vein for as long as I am in the Senate.
Some have criticized the Green New Deal as being too unrealistic to actually become law. Do you think this can actually make it to the books and become policy?
The Green New Deal is very powerful, and it's tapped into a sense of anger that young people especially have about how this issue has not been dealt with by preceding generations. So I'm very confident that the Green New Deal is the tip of the spear in a movement that is going to see comprehensive changes in the laws of our country at the federal, state, and local level, and it's going to happen a lot sooner than people think.
There's been a lot of conversation about transportation and rail access in Western Massachusetts. Have you been able to have any conversations on the federal level about investing more in the state's infrastructure, specifically the idea of more east-west rail transportation across Massachusetts?
I serve on the Infrastructure Committee, and we're working on two bills. One is a surface transportation bill, which would be about a $300 billion transportation bill, which we could use out here in Western Mass. And we hope to be able to get that done this year, fingers crossed. And then there's a larger infrastructure bill, which Donald Trump says that he wants, which would be $2 trillion, which would include a lot of funding that could be used out here in the Berkshires and other parts of the state for critical transportation issues, including transit.
You've also been on the forefront of another big Berkshire issue, that of getting Massachusetts channels back on the dial for Spectrum customers. What is the status of your efforts to get the cable giant to return Massachusetts programming to Berkshire residents?
I've introduced legislation with Congressman Richie Neal and Elizabeth Warren just last week, which I am going to try to attach to a satellite piece of legislation that will be moving through the Congress in the next few months that will force a negotiation between Charter and the broadcasters to resolve the issues so that the people who live in the Berkshires have access to the local news, weather, and sports of Channel 22 in Springfield so that at 6 o'clock and 11 o'clock at night they can turn on their own cable system and be able to see what Massachusetts sports and politics are all about, and not New York.
When you look at Massachusetts right now, what do you see as the most critical issues facing your constituents?
At the top of the list is blocking further cuts in healthcare or NIH funding. We are the leading state of the United States in medical research and in our medical system. and Trump and his allies in Congress have tried to slash funding. We have to additionally continue to focus on net neutrality and the openness of the architecture of the internet so that smaller companies can be created all across our state, but especially out here in the Berkshires. We also have to push a Green New Deal so that the wind and solar and battery jobs are incentivized out here, because there's thousands of new jobs that will in fact be created for blue collar workers if the Green New Deal is implemented. So I could go down on these issues, but at the heart of it is we have to continue to try to democratize access to opportunity through education, through healthcare, through job training, and opening up our economy so that everyone is able to prosper.
Speaking of the economy, what was your reaction to President Trump's announcement this week that he would impose new tariffs on Mexico in response to illegal immigration?
The president's announcement of imposing a 5% across-the-board tariff on all Mexican goods is just part of his blunderbuss trade strategy that has no purpose, no end to it, other than the fact that he can do it. He should be trying his best to negotiate a comprehensive immigration bill within our own country that would significantly staunch the flow of immigration, you know, across our borders. But he is just unwilling to sit down and work with the Democrats to accomplish that comprehensive approach to the issue of immigration.
You're also working on legislation concerning robocalls. Tell me about that. What efforts are you making to combat robocalls across the country?
Robocalls are a bipartisan menace. There are no red robocalls or blue robocalls. There are just irritating, harassing robocalls. So that's why I'm working together with Senator John Thune of South Dakota, who is the Republican whip, the second most powerful Republican in the Senate. And our bill just passed 98-1 on the Senate floor last week. And we're very hopeful that the same thing will happen in the House and that we'll be able to put a good bill on the president's desk so that we can begin to dramatically alter the course of the relationship which all Americans have with their phones, whether it's on their kitchen table or in their pocket or pocketbook. Okay? It just has to end.
At a time where politics couldn't seem more contentious, what's it like on the ground in D.C., working with your colleagues across the aisle? Is there a sense of tension there, or do you still find ways to work on things together?
Well, I try to find areas of agreement with my Republican colleagues, whether it be on robocalls or opioids or even a comprehensive bill, which I was able to pass in December of 2018 with Senator Cory Gardner for $7 to $8 billion to deal with something called the Asia Reassurance Initiative, so that we had funding that could be used by our government to assure countries in Asia that they didn't have to cozy up to China unnecessarily. So that's how I try to operate. Where I can find agreement with Republicans, I do, and I'm able to pass legislation. Opioids, China, robocalls, they're all going to be laws. But where we have to fight, where they're trying to undermine a woman's right to choose, our environment, our educational funding for poor children in our country, I'm going to fight as hard as I can for the people of Massachusetts and our country.